Am I on? Yes. Hey, good morning, everybody. It's a bit weird, right? Is the sound weird? Okay. I've been to Tung Song Hong. It's in Luxi, right? Near Don Mueang Airport. Yeah, I've been there. I don't know Kun Basert, but I've been there. We have a house in our own house in Thailand, but it's down south. So Thailand's very much home for us. So I'll just get really straight into it today. So what we do, just really quickly, is we're very intentional about this. We are hardcore, seriously trying to develop leadership. And it's kind of easy to say, oh, we're into developing leadership, but we really are. That's our thing. And so we operate in a whole lot of those countries there. And the reason why we can operate in so many countries is because maybe 30 years ago, we thought, oh, why don't we utilize the skills and abilities and giftings of local Christian people to run the work instead of just having one family doing it? And so at one stage, Carly and I, we had 30 Thai boys living with us, basically in a rice field. In an area in the far northeast near Laos and Cambodia. But we just thought, if we were to grow this thing and get local people to start running the shop instead of us doing it all, then we can really multiply the thing. So we get a hold of young people who are very vulnerable. And they're all impoverished, but many of them are extremely vulnerable to in society. Some of them come from extremely dysfunctional families, etc. So that's kind of what we do, but everything's run by local people now. And so we have about 20 projects, discipleship homes overseas that we operate. And now our young people are beginning to take it over, because our young people are kind of like mid-30s or late-ish 30s or something, and so they're beginning to run the thing. Tony Campoli tells a story about this guy. It's in the Vietnam War, and there's this guy, and he's fighting the North Vietnamese. He gets shot, bang, but he's not dead. He's lying on the ground going, help, someone rescue me, help me, get me out of here, help. This guy crawls out, this Marine, we'll call him Andy. Andy crawls out of his foxhole and gets this guy. And he carries him back to the foxhole and puts him in the foxhole. And just as Andy's getting into the foxhole, he gets shot and he's killed. But the guy who originally got shot, who got rescued, he's still okay. He's shot, but he survives. Sometime later, the guy who got shot, let's call him Bill, Bill visits Andy's parents in the States. And Bill starts getting on the terps a little bit too much, and he starts talking. And as he starts talking, he begins to be a bit of an ingrate. He's not grateful for what their son had done in saving his life, because the son had crawled out of the foxhole, he got shot and killed, and the parents wanted to try and find meaning in the fact that their son had been killed. But actually, their son had been killed for this guy, and he was a bit low grade, actually. And so at the end of the night, this guy's saying a whole lot of stupid stuff, and he drives off home somewhere, and Andy's parents are shattered at what their son did for a guy like that. Hold that thought. It's Easter time, but for me, it's a little bit irrelevant whether it's Easter time or not. I just really like these verses. I love this. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And the Word was with God. That makes sense. And he was with God in the beginning. No one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father. And so we beginning to see this formulation of the Trinity. I just love that language. I'm a pragmatist business type person, so I read that and I sort of think, well, this is kind of weird. But I love it. I think it's really cool. And so the God-man was born as a baby. and drank mother's milk and puked up and pooed himself and weed himself and did all those things and went off to school and did his thing and burped and cried and did all those things that, that kids do. He was, of course, he was born in a bit of a Roman backwater. You know, the number of miles he went away from his home was very little, apart from when he was a type of refugee, I suppose, going off to Egypt. But he was just kind of like a normal kid, I guess. And then we see that the God-man is unfairly tried and found guilty, and he's hanging on a cross being crucified, and then he says these words, "Eloi, Eloi, lema sabachthani," my God, why have you forsaken me? He'd always been in this massively close fellowship, like we can't understand. We don't get it. He was in this fellowship with the Father for eternity previous. And then all of a sudden, God the Father has turned his back on him. He's on the cross, and he's facing now the consequences of sin. The God-man was sinless, but he's on the cross now taking your sins and my sins. You know, some sins like, I don't know, pedophilia and murder and domestic violence and malice and greed. And Jesus is himself facing the consequences of those sins. God can't look upon sin. So there's this wall between the Father and Jesus now, like he'd never had before, because they were in this fellowship like we just don't get. But all of a sudden now he was separated from God, the Father. And so he had to face all the consequences of that. What was that like? I don't know. I don't know. It's past my pay grade. I don't get it. And what was worse for Jesus? Was it actually literally being physically crucified, you know, crown of thorns and all that sort of stuff? Or was it being separated from the Father? Which was worse? I don't know. I imagine it was a spiritual mental angst, but I don't know. Again, it's past our pay grades to understand. But that's what Jesus went through when he was on the cross. Now, your average evangelical believes this sort of stuff. And you can read it there. And it's pretty much the sort of stuff that pretty much we believe as well. The Trinity and the role of Jesus and the Holy Spirit and etc. But what's interesting is that we as folk living in this time, we live in a time that you might call postmodernism. What's that? Well, it's for me, I just like illustrations. Postmodernism is stuff like this. In our day and age, we have less trust in our governments than we used to, especially since COVID time, eh? This is common all over the world. There's less trust in the government. And so we think that maybe I've done my research and I don't need to listen to authorities because I've done my own research. I'm not particularly talking about COVID. It could be about anything. We don't really believe authorities so much anymore. Another thing that happens is that in a postmodern times, we tend to think that we can have two viewpoints that oppose each other, but they're both okay and we can keep them together. Example. Now, I'm not particularly picking on these people, but it's a really clear example. When there were these lesbian women in America, and they call themselves queers for Palestine. But if they go to Iran, or they go to Palestine, they might get killed for being lesbian. They might even get thrown off the roofs of buildings in Iran for being that way. But they can hold these two conflicting ideas together and it's both okay. Another example might be people feel that there's no more moral absolutes. And you'll hear people say, well, you know, my truth is, and if they just said, in my opinion, but my truth is, like their truth must be right because it belongs to them. And so we live in a difficult world such that there are consequences to that. And one of those, let's have a look at that first. One of those consequences is commonly, according to George Barna, who is an American pollster who you may have heard of, Christian guy. He would say that 64% of evangelicals, you remember them, they're the people like us, they hold these weird beliefs that aren't normal. They aren't the normal nice beliefs that they claim to believe, but actually they go along with stuff and they pick and choose what they like and they'll leave out other stuff that they aren't comfortable with. So there's a lot of people who would say deep down, and I know people like this, deep down, you know, I actually reckon, you know, deep down, you know, I believe that, you know, Jesus is the way, the truth, and life, but actually deep down, I reckon all paths lead to God if we're really sincere and if we really care about our beliefs. All paths may very well lead to God. And who says there's absolute truth? I don't feel comfortable with that concept. And so people will pick and choose what they will believe in and what they won't. And yet at the same time claim to be evangelical. There's a point to all this, just wait. And there was also a pastor, a missionary that I knew in Thailand, actually, and he used to go to a Bible college, and he was a pretty good dude, this guy, he's a pretty good dude. And he would go to a Bible college and he'd be teaching. And then these students who are being trained to become pastors, they would say to him, you know, Ajahn, you know, Reverend, what you're saying is really good. You know, it's out of the Bible, but you don't really think we're going to follow that bit of it, right? And so even like 25 years ago, folk in Thailand were picking and choosing what they would follow and not follow. So my question is for a lot of us is, are we like the guy who got shot and we get rescued, we get thrown in the foxhole, and the God man who rescued us gets killed? Are we a little bit like the ingrate who actually, when push comes to shove, we don't take seriously what Jesus did for us on the cross? You know what I'm saying? What I find with our people overseas is they don't tutu with theology. They don't play around with it. They might question stuff, but they're not going to tutu around with it. And it's one of the major differences that I see between the West and so many of the countries that we go into. And it was either Mark Twain or Henry Rousseau who said, in the beginning, God created man, and then man decided to return the favor. And we like to, in some ways, we like to construct God that fits in with our views, with our neo-cultural views that we have at the moment. And so we can end up being like the guy who's rescued, where we don't have gratitude. We all lack gratitude, but most of us know that we lack gratitude, at least. And so we can become like the rescued man. So for our folk overseas, they don't work with us because they're on the payroll and they're going to get lots of money. No. They don't do it for that reason. They risk their lives and they risk themselves to do what they do. And so there's some of our guys from Honduras, in San Pedro Sula in Honduras. But for instance, here, this is in Burma, in Myanmar, there's this massive civil war going on right now that the news probably won't really tell you about. And people are being killed left, right, and center. And so the government's coming in and just grabbing kids and saying, congratulations, you're now in the Burmese army, let's go, pal. And so we have all these boys' houses in Myanmar, and our boys are sitting ducks to get taken by the army or the police and taken off. So one boy's already been in prison. He got a 30-year prison sentence. Another, he's out now, actually. So that was good. Another boy got taken by a particular rebel army, got sent to the front line, got shot but didn't die. And there's all sorts of stuff going on over there. But our people are so resilient. And again, they don't tutu round with the basic tenets of our faith. They don't play around with it. They're serious about it. And they know that they could die for what they are doing. And so right now in Burma, for instance, we have 9 young people who are at Bible college. That's some of them there. And they go to Bible college because they're preparing to become evangelists, church planters, to develop a whole series of churches. So that's their thing. That's what they do. And the Wa tribe in Burma, they're the biggest producers of methamphetamine in the world. And they were headhunters. This is a pretty old picture, obviously. But so we started up a home for Wa boys. And so now 4 of them are at Bible college training because they want to become church planters. And so that boy there, David, has just finished doing a Master's in Divinity. He's just gone back to the Wa lands again. That guy's a star. He really could develop a whole series of churches amongst his Wa people. They are a fierce tribal people who have been delving in drugs, opium and meth and heroin for years. So we're trying to develop Christian leadership. That's our thing. So we were at the VIG project a couple of years back in El Salvador. And so you guys contributed towards that. And so I'll give some illustrations about our work in Central America. So we've just taken on this boy. I won't point him out to you. He's such a cute kid. His name is Barack Obama. Cool name, right? He's 13 years old. He's in year 7. His dad died of a heart attack. His mum got a bullet in the head from some people. And so his auntie looked after him, and she died of cancer. So he's got nothing. His older brother lives with us, so now Barack Obama also lives with us as well. And apparently he's really smart. His older bro, he's smart as too. And so we've got Barack Obama with us. And if he does well, if he toes the line and follows what we do, he'll end up at uni. He'll end up studying a course that actually leads to a job, and he will be able to support what's left of his family, and he will be influential within gang communities. And so that's the sort of people that we're trying to develop. You guys helped build our work in El Salvador, in a place called Soyapango in San Salvador, in El Salvador. And just as a report for you guys, we took on 8 boys. 6 of them are doing good, 2 of them are like, but of those 6 boys who were doing good, 1 came first in the class, another came second, another came third, another boy, he came close to getting a prize for, you know, top student, and another young fella, he's on about 80% at the moment, but mum and dad are both in prison, because dad was a fairly senior national level gang member. He's never going to see his dad again. Never. He'll never see his dad again. His dad will never get out of prison. And his mum is in prison too because she lived off the proceeds of gang crime. He may not ever see his mum ever again as well. So that's kind of what's going on for these young people. They are extremely vulnerable and they've grown up in very violent situations. And so it's hard work working with these guys. One guy got really mad at our center and he grabbed a knife and he stuck it through the wall right next to the head of one of our house mother, you know, because they're frustrated and they're angry and they're let down and all they've known is violence. But it's starting to work. It's starting to happen. They're starting to turn around. Now, in our home in San Pedro Sula, that home is in San Pedro Sula, which is the second city of Honduras. Our house parents there look after about 8 or 10 boys. So again, they don't tutu around with the gospel. They're serious about resurrection, the death of Jesus, etc. They don't play around with it. They're very serious. And they take major risks because they live in what is deemed to be the most violent city in the world. And behind our house father's church, because he's the pastor, is a gang. And the leader of the gang lives right behind their church. If the leader of the gang wants to get a bit of utu out there on, you know, for whatever reason, because remember, our boys have been kind of known or they've had some very loose affiliation with a gang. If a gang member comes to a house and says, I want that kid, if the house father says no, he can just get shot. They'll just kill him. So the guy who lives behind our church in San Pedro, apparently he likes what we do. He's looking after us. He's keeping an eye out. That's what you want. But that's the situation that these people live in. So for a start, would you want 10 teenage boys living with you? Actually, it's fun. No, seriously, it's fun. We had, like I said, we had 30 of them. It's kind of fun. But if a gang member comes to their house, they could get killed. Our house father and mother, they go into zones where on one side of the road is MS-13, on the other side of the road is Barrio 18, and one of our boys, he lives right on the boundary. And if the guns start going off, you can easily cop a bullet. So it's really dangerous. They can easily get murdered. And there was a shootout near our parents' house in San Pedro not so long ago. And I think it was at a pool parlor. I think 13 people got murdered. And it'll be a drug thing, of course. So again, they don't play around with this stuff. They're very serious about the gospel thing. Very serious. And when we, how much time, what's the time? Oh yeah, when we lived in Thailand back in the day, it was so much fun taking a risk and not doing the norm. It was so much fun. It was so cool, man. So we had all these guys with us, and some of them did some really funky stuff that I won't go into now, but it just made life interesting. So one time we had these street kid boys living with us, and this was in Bangkok, right back in the early days, and it was Christmas time. And they're all excited because they're having their first Christmas, you know, together. And, oh, it's going to be cool because there's presents under the tree and all sort of carry on. And then one of the guys snuck in there early in the morning, stole all the Christmas presents and ran away. And then when the other boys woke up in the morning, all of a sudden there's all these knives that come out from wherever. And they want to get them and they want to kill them. And we tried to track him down, but we couldn't find the guy. Anyway, it's just probably just as well. But it just makes life fun. And you have work stories. You know what I mean? You have work stories. And my daughter, she's a senior nurse here in Christchurch. But oh, have I got a picture of her? I think I have. Of when she was just, there she is there, when she was just a little kid. She got run over twice. So she were in the back of a little truck, and there was about 20 people in the truck, and she fell off the truck, and the truck reversed over her, just over her leg. And then everybody yells, stop, stop, stop. And then the truck runs back over her again. And then more seriously, she got abducted. She didn't really know she'd been abducted, but the guy who abducted her he'd got back into heroin again. And we all knew him really well, but he abducted her just for a really short time. She just thought she was going on a trip. but it was his way of threatening us, saying, anytime I want, I can catch up with you. He didn't do anything to her, but, you know, that's kind of... But through all of those trials, life is so interesting. And we expect to succeed. We expect it. We expect to succeed and we expect to suffer. We expect both. And that's biblical. You should expect to suffer when you serve God. You should expect it. Anticipate it. When Jesus, you know, just prior to going on to the cross, he spends all night praying. He's praying to the Father all night long. Now, if I'd been Jesus, If I'd been Jesus, I would have thought, okay, I'm going to go on the cross. It's going to be really bad. I've got to mentally prepare myself for this. It's going to be really bad. And he's prayed all night long to the Father. And yet he gets on the cross and he goes, my God, why have you forsaken me? Didn't he know ahead of time that that was going to happen? Or did he not know? I don't know. But we have to be brave. And this is so cliché-ic, it's almost embarrassing, but it's true. We can take on the world and we can win. People just don't believe it. God is the king. We are his ambassadors. We should expect to succeed. And we've had so many... It sounds like bragging. I'm not bragging. We've had so many success cases. Just because two people from Tokoro went over to Thailand and then the work spread. And we suffered. Believe me, we suffered. Because during that time when we had all those boys with us, my wife, her bone marrow condition was getting worse and worse until she developed multiple myeloma, which is a bone marrow cancer. So we know all about the hard times. But through all of that and through all of those difficulties, God comes through and he has to rescue us. And so our faith is never boring because we take risks. Get that. Our faith is never boring because we think we are ambassadors of the King. We expect to succeed, but we know we'll suffer at the same time. One time, this is a good story, one time, all these people are rushing down to the river near our house. And we're like, oh, actually, no, this isn't a good story, this is a terrible story, but it's interesting. All these people are rushing down to the house, and Carly's there with the two kids doing homeschooling. I was away somewhere, and she goes, kids, let's all go down and follow where they're going. They were going down to the river to watch an extrajudicial execution of a drug dealer. It's like, this is the life that we kind of, I won't tell you how he died. It's shocking. But at that time, the police were killing drug dealers left, right, and center. And, you know, the guy who abducted our daughter, and we're like, you know, Chelsea didn't know. A policeman came to our house one day, and he was drunk. And he says, oh, you know, if you ever need a hand with anything, just let me know. And I wasn't there. I'm never there. And he said to my wife, have a look at my gun. And he pulls out his gun, and Carly's like, okay. And he goes, can you see all the notches on the gun? She goes, yeah. That's all the heads I've taken. If you need me to whack that guy who abducted your daughter, just let me know. And Carly, she was tempted, but she said, no, it's okay. We'll work it out. But through the trials and the difficulties, God is with you. And if you don't step out, if you don't take risks, like our people do overseas, if you don't take risks, then you lose so much. And Christian life can become mundane. Whereas if you step out and you take risks, knowing that you're an ambassador for the King, that's when life gets really interesting. And so I want to thank you guys for your support of our work. That's awesome. One thing I want to show you is this, and you can see it down the back there. I'll be down the back there later on. It's called the wealth pie. We're wealthy. All that stuff they're talking about, how hard it is with petrol, etc., and all that. Yeah, it's gone up in price and it is harder for everybody, but it's way, 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 way harder overseas than it is here, believe me. So, you know, you can buy all the media narrative about how tough it is, but it's way tougher overseas. So we're wealthy. And so what we're saying to people is, why don't you donate one piece of your wealth pie to Empower Asia Latin America? One piece of wealth pie is going to cost you $100 a year. It's $1.94 a week. It's nothing. But the trick is we hook you in for life. So we make it really easy. If you were to start donating $100 in April, next year, in about February, we'll contact you and we'll say, hey, your $100 is due soon. But at the, so it's just a really good way of getting people involved in mission. It's not just simply about making money. It's about getting people involved in mission, especially if they aren't involved. And then we send out our propaganda to you every month or two, just to, so you know what we're about. And we'll tell you the good and the bad. We don't just tell you all the good stuff. So I really want to thank you guys for your support for what we do, genuinely. And I encourage you to go away and think about whether you are the guy who rescued the fella, or whether you're the person who got rescued and you're a little bit ungrateful. Because what Jesus did for us, wow, wow. That's a good lead up to Easter, right? That's a really good lead up to Easter. Okay, all the best. God bless.